Welcome to The Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the leader of Warwick District Council. This is an informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs, touching lives right across Warwick District and thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on at the moment across the district. Welcome, guys. It's Friday again. Hooray. Beer in hand. We've made it. Boy, it's hot out there. And what a week we've had. What a month we've had, actually. So today, we've got with us two good mates. We've got Councillor Liam Bartlett, who heads up our culture and economy portfolio, as well as many other tasks, including being the operations director at Warwick Castle. And we have our chair, the infamous and Councillor Minnie Mangat. Thank you for joining us, Minnie, and coming to share with us your experiences from the Commonwealth Games and broader afield. Just by way of introduction, this is our second episode. We're still learning, and we've had a couple of questions come in from you, which we'll come to in just a moment. But thank you once again for joining us. Right, Minnie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You have been so busy, so busy. I mean, it's been an amazing run, these Commonwealth Games. Can you share with us a little of your experience? What's been the highlights for the, you know, the unusual things you might have seen?
Sure, sure. So I was lucky enough to represent the council at the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony in Birmingham, which was so much fun. And I think probably the closing ceremony was more fun than the opening ceremony. And I think it's just amazing how sports kind of brought everyone together. So my highlight would probably be the closing ceremony. But here more locally, I think, you know, there was so much going on. I also was able to go and have a go at lawn bowls, which is the first time I've done it. And I actually won. So now I think I'm a pro.
It was amazing in the, you know, in the pump room gardens where they were doing the trials, just how many. That was queues every single day of people, young people, children, everything going through. Who knows? Maybe we've got a future medalist that's been introduced to lawn bowls.
Maybe, indeed. I think it's also the kind of perception we have of lawn bowls. I think, particularly for myself personally, it's really changed that. I also went along to Victoria Park and watched the lawn bowls. And, you know, there was a lot of young people, obviously from all the different countries of the Commonwealth. But, you know, there is a perception, and I had this too, that it was kind of a retired sport almost for people of retired age.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not. And it's quite good fun. And I got very competitive.
No, Minnie, I couldn't believe that for a minute. But look, the other bit, I mean, was interesting to see was just the mixed abilities. You know, we were witnessing some phenomenal para sports as well and really, really excellent sporting achievements there. I don't know, Liam, did it touch you?
I think the thing that across the whole Games that struck me, and you talked about this, about your experience of the Games back in Australia when they came, is A, that they were so friendly. Right? Mm. You've got all these really mixed abilities, really mixed types of sports all coming together. The pubs and restaurants were full of different athletes from all sorts of walks of life, and actually that was kind of is brought together in the way the bowls is sort of presented. The bowls really does bring all sorts of different types of talent and level of experience, and some of these people have got, you know, full-time jobs back in their hometowns and they're coming over and doing what they love as part of such a, you know, a mega international sporting occasion. So amazing. I saw someone for the group from the Cook Islands enjoying a beer in the new bowling green on the Saturday night, and you know, they're just soaking it up. It was great.
I went into the ops room, which we had in the base in the town hall, which was, you know, dealing with those essential things when there was rubbish that needed clearing or there was someone in need of help and they could see them on CCTV. But they were such a fun team in there. They were actually backing Norfolk Island because they felt who were here for the bowls, principally that was it. And there's only like 2,000 residents in Norfolk Island and they just thought, you know what, we're going to get behind them. That was really the spirit of the Games, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, look, you know, our officers and our teams did a great job, but I think it's the volunteers really that made it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I spoke to lots of different people locally who'd come from, you know, I spoke to a lady from Kent who said, you know, that she was just here for a few days and that she'd never really been to Leamington before. And she's, you know, really, really, you know, looking at all the buildings and says how much there is to do. And just the friendliness and that even in Birmingham and here, the volunteers and they kind of made it more fun. And, you know, the way they sort of greet you as you enter and how upbeat everything was. And I, you know, we were very lucky with the weather too. You know, that kind of made it too. But yeah, just very fun and bringing everyone together.
To make, it's amazing how sunshine makes people just want to barbecue and start saying, g'day. but there were, look, it did involve, I think, two people just giving a little to make it work. I mean, I was so grateful to the residents of Warwick who just, you know, had to deal with the road being closed and the dislocation from that. And on the cycle race day, I did a walk up Emscott Road. And it was wonderful just to see, you know, people painted their front doors, you know, the gardens were looking fantastic, the kids were out, everyone. And I know it was a bit of a challenge, but to be fair, I think the residents really responded so positively. It was such a fun thing to see.
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone I've spoken to really enjoyed the cycle race and kind of thought, well, it's only for one day that the roads are closed. And there was an element of that, you know, although it was inconvenient, you know, people embraced it, I think. Yeah. The majority of people did anyway.
Now, there were two fan zones, weren't there? Festival sites, I think we called them. One, obviously, in the Pump Room Gardens, which I frequented, and obviously the one, too, in Warwick, in the Market Square. Liam, in your domain, because it was your team that was behind that, and we must be, I'm sure, doing a wash-up lessons learned thing. But first cut, is there things there that are shaping your thinking about how we could, you know, offer more to the residents and use those spaces in different ways?
Yeah, I think both sites proved their worth, really. The Market Square one in Warwick just brought a real sense of vibrancy to the town centre and gave Warwick a real sort of identity during the games. Because we only have the cycle race in Warwick for one day, right?
Yeah.
The main activity was obviously going on in Leamington. So it kind of really spread the games across to Warwick and gave a real sense of scale and excitement in the town. And I think that proves the way that marketplace can be used going forward. You know, for the screening of live events, it seems to me like a no-brainer that we'd start to bring some of the big, you know, sport in Wimbledon maybe could be shown in the Market Square. And really kind of create a series of summer events that highlights that beautiful space. And the pump rooms, I mean, you know, we use the pump room gardens for lots of events through the year. But to me, that just showed that you can sustain that sort of momentum for a few weeks through the summer. You need the weather, of course, but it increased the footfall. You could see people enjoying the push bikes up into the town, which they were running. And actually, even on days when, you know, you had quite low levels of sporting activity on the screen, it's still full, still being enjoyed by lots of residents. I think that the early wash-up is you know, an all-round success.
Bid did a brilliant job putting on those pedalos, and I think everyone enjoyed them. I think they were mainly used for touring, actually. But I'm conscious that, you know, maybe we didn't get as much footfall at the top end of town. I'm conscious, for example, in the Priors, you know, we need to get people into these places. It is making at least me think differently about the parade and how we use these urban public open spaces and how we can build on what we've learned during the Commonwealth Games and before. And I know that is a divisive issue. I'm well aware of the, you know, the divisions on that. But we've got to, I think, understand how, if you like, these big events can support our local businesses. We did, I think it was 95% plus occupancy for all bed and breakfast hotels right across the West Midlands. I know there are a number of hospitality businesses that did really well, but clearly some of our retail wasn't as attractive because people were outside having fun instead of buying raincoats or whatever it is that they might have otherwise been buying. So Minnie, as chair, did the volunteer side, is there something takeaway there? I mean, I was, you know, impressed that there was support from all corners of our community, the Ahmadiyya Muslims, the Gurdwara, there were people out from every part of our community. This wasn't just one age group or one particular demographic, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everyone wanted to join in, basically. And I think the volunteers, you just feel blown away by it, to be honest. People giving up their time, their free time. And, you know, some of the people I spoke to said they didn't actually feel like they were volunteering. They were just having a good time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's what makes it. And also, you know, from in terms of our officers, how they kind of managed the volunteers, there's a lot to be said about that because, you know, they made it fun too.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to learn, the, you know, to keep that momentum. And when we look at having volunteers for anything in the future, it is about making it fun. And, you know, it's not their job. They've come here because they want to help, but they've gone back by having a really, really good time. And I think that people would come again, and it kind of incentivizes people. And if we get that message out to people that, you know, look, people have had fun volunteering, then more people will come forward for anything, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think just before we move on from the Commonwealth Games broadly, the bowls is one thing that I think we just don't remember all the time how strong the presence we have for bowls in Leamington.
Yeah.
You know, the work Bowls England are doing broadly across the brush to make the sport more accessible has just been catapulted over the last couple of weeks. You know. Some of those final matches were genuinely gripping. And I think, you know, you could see across social media, people in the stands that wouldn't ordinarily go and watch a bowls game in Leamington. So hopefully for the Victoria Park Greens generally going forward, this is a bit of a game-changing moment, and they start to see really good growth and an appetite from younger people to play, and maybe Minnie can join too.
I was one of those people that wouldn't normally go and watch, you know, so and I felt my, you know, found myself cheering people on and probably being one of the noisiest ones there, and you would think it's quiet.
No, never, Minnie.
You think it's quiet, but, you know, part some of it made me feel like, you know, you could be at a football match because the passion was there, and, you know, and I really enjoyed it, and I definitely think it's kind of reframed the whole thing for me, and I think probably for a lot of people.
So would you guys back, I mean, there's going to be a bid possibly for a World Bowls competition now for Leamington, is again, I mean, there was one done in the 90s. Is that something you guys would back? I mean, what's your
100%
view?
100%. I think we need to claim stake of the home of you know, lawn bowls.
Yes.
Yeah. We are at the heart of the sport, and we've got brilliant greens. They look fantastic on
the
TV.
They did.
The
team did an amazing job. I mean,
and we should own that. You know, it's something that's really
Josh, after all the weather and the COVID implications of trying to get those greens in shape, it's what taken 3 years, I think, hasn't it, Liam, to get us to that. And Minnie, you and I also had this, moving on a bit to the legacy elements of this, we had, I think I mentioned this last time, the best fun opening the play equipment, didn't we, at Victoria Park?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that it's really important, even before the Commonwealth Games started, that, you know, the refurb of Victoria Park, it was so well received. Mm. And, you know, it was amazing to be there that day and see all these little faces, really, really happy and smiling. And I know we were able to offer them free ice creams, which obviously made their day. And the adults, some of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, we've got to remember that's there for the duration now. Yeah. You know, that's not just 10 days and then it's gone. And it's those sort of things that we've been able to benefit from in terms of a legacy in our locality. And going forward, if we were to have more sporting events, you know, we would hopefully get more things like that. Definitely. And be able to spread it, you know, further across the district.
See, it is a confidence building exercise. Once you demonstrate you can do this, the credibility to win the next bid for the next thing improves. And as long as we capture legacy benefits for the local community, we keep goodwill with those sorts of ventures. Because it does involve an allocation of resource. Our officers worked, you know, weekends, evenings, and really they were volunteers, actually, to be fair. And to make all that work, I think you need to have something to show for it at the other end.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Like, when we talk about the Commonwealth Games and how people will remember it, you know, people remember how you make them feel, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that the weather was great, the fun element of it, what we've got in terms of, you know, legacy. It's how people feel about it, and they'll remember that.
Yeah.
And it's incentivizes you to do more, doesn't it?
It does. So, Liam, we did some other long-term legacy pieces. We managed to scrub up Leamington Station forecourt and get it in a place it should be. And there'll be more work coming, I understand, with the Charitable Trust, the Railway Trust, helping us with new rails. So that'll all smarten that up. But we also, you know, it's funny because, I mean, people are just waking up to these waymarking, wayfinding, I should say. Mm. You know, do you want to talk a bit about that? What's happened there and how did that come?
I mean, it gave us a great opportunity to improve the wayfinding around Leamington generally and some of the street scene. You know, the new wayfinding street signs that have gone in across Leamington, they look fantastic.
They
but
do.
Also, they're really obviously classic. A critical way to navigate your way into the town and open up those sort of natural routes up through the town. And to your point, bring people up into the heart of the parade and to the top of town towards Christchurch Gardens.
Yeah.
There's also some really nice pieces of legacy, like there was a Commonwealth finger post that was installed in the
Christchurch Gardens
at the top, which is a really lovely local idea.
Lovely.
Which points to all of the other Leamingtons around the Commonwealth.
Friends of Christchurch Gardens.
Yep. Supported through. Yeah. They backed
Fabulous.
It. They pushed it.
Yeah.
Great piece of community engagement. Of course, the Leamington colour palette in the tunnel and the underpass at Leamington train station and at Warwick.
Yeah.
So both of our train stations have had a really good makeover. We've got some much better wayfinding across the town, and we've got the green spaces improvements in Victoria Park. So, you know, that's real strong legacy. And I think the point Minnie makes around volunteers making it and our officers investing time, we also have to remember we need to provide a reward for the residents that were impacted by things like the closures around Victoria Park.
Yeah.
And they will now have a much better green space moving forward. Yeah. And in due course, tennis court refurbishments, etc.
So talk to us a bit about that, because I know it's been quite contentious over the last, a year or more. It's a program and process that we've had to work in with our commitments to the Commonwealth Games. What's going on at the moment, and you know, where do you see some resolution coming as to what we're doing with those tennis courts in Victoria?
Yeah, so I think just to start with, if you look at the courts at Christchurch Gardens, that's sort of proof there that we have,
including a basketball court, which actually was a suggestion from the local residents that we managed to pick up and get in. It's incredibly popular.
And you'll often see more basketball players than tennis players. Yeah, it's a good balance.
Really cool.
Yeah. I think there's just one net, isn't there, in Victoria Park, and I take my son down there, and there's always a queue, like.
Yeah. And 3x3 basketball is, you know, actually helped by the Commonwealth Games. It's just going to take off. But that shows, I suppose, our commitment to the redevelopment and continuous improvements of the courts and the resurfacing. But obviously, it would have been foolhardy to go and do that resurfacing to Victoria Park when it's about to have a media centre and, you know, 15 marquees and car parking laid all over it.
Sure, of course.
So that work was always scheduled to come after the Games, and we're now working through making sure we deliver on that promise, but also at the same time as restructuring some of the tennis agreements across the district to give opportunity for people to run those and operate them in a way that, A, means that we can encourage grassroots tennis and coaching and provide really good learning on those courts, but also give us some sinking fund in the future to do what we've done with things like Christchurch Gardens and make them world-class tennis courts that are sustainable. Otherwise, we'll have lots of courts, but they'll all be unplayable.
Yeah, and you're working quite closely with the Lawn Tennis Association, for example, taking their advice. In fact, I think you're even winning grant funding from them or something, aren't you? I mean, it is part of a national program to strengthen the tennis, tennis coaching and the whole piece. So
yes.
It's not just in isolation or for this year. It's looking long term. Good stuff. I just want to test you. I have floated the idea with Andy Street and he with me about the idea of bidding for the Olympics. Are we crazy? Do you think the next Olympics should be in London, or do you think we should have a leveling up Olympics in the West Midlands and maybe partnering with Manchester? What's your thoughts, Minnie?
I mean, I think partnering across sort of, you know, Manchester, I do worry about the practicalities of that, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But look, you know, we've done an amazing job of the Commonwealth Games. And, you know, if we take lessons from that, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't look to be bigger. And, you know, I think a point that you made earlier, Andrew, about lots of different communities joining in, you know, they were lots of people from, you know, members of the Commonwealth countries, and, you know, it was quite diverse how everyone got involved, and actually the Olympics would be even more diverse.
Yeah, it definitely would. Yeah. It's a massive step up from Commonwealth Games, but it is really exciting.
We've done it before.
But we also delivered the Commonwealth Games at the last minute.
We did.
We turned that around in a short period of time.
That's a good point.
And so actually, give us a longer run in with more planning. I don't see there's a reason why we wouldn't. And why not? You know, we should have the aspiration to do that, even if we don't land.
Well, I like to hear this confidence. Fantastic. I mean, the other point is, I don't know, did you kind of feel a bit more connected with the West Midlands as a place because of the Commonwealth Games?
Particularly with Birmingham.
Don't you? I mean, I thought the public transport situation, despite the threat of rail strikes and all that sort of stuff, worked remarkably well. That was my view of it. Yeah. And I actually feel a lot more. I'd never been to Alexandra Stadium before, so now I know where it is. So that's a plus. But, I mean, I just get mentally, I feel more connected. Maybe it's just a glow. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think, I mean, the buzz in Birmingham when you went there throughout the Commonwealth Games, you know, it was, I feel like we almost brought it back. So wherever you were going into Birmingham, people were bringing back that kind of buzz and excitement around the Commonwealth Games. And Birmingham looked good as well.
It looked brilliant, yeah.
And I think sometimes it's hurt. There is a little bit of a reputation that it doesn't always look, you know.
It's a good excuse to scrub up.
Yeah, and I think the makeovers, done wonders.
Yeah, I also felt that it really, the ceremonies reflected the diversity of our communities, and really I was so proud of that. You know, it made us look distinct in my view.
Yeah, so. I think the, I'm sorry to keep banging on about the closing ceremony, but it was, really good. There was a, a It was very much music centred.
So was it UB40 or Ozzy Osbourne? Who was your fave? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, my fave was
the dancing.
My favourite was actually Punjabi MC. And
okay, cool.
the kind of the talk around the stadium with a lot of people was people were saying, you know, that is a Birmingham anthem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And all the different, like there was Apache and lots of different, you know, and I felt so at home watching that and being a part of that, and it made me feel more connected to Birmingham. And, you know, being the first South Asian woman to ever be elected as chair in our council, it just made me feel really proud of my South Asian heritage.
No, you're absolutely right, too. And it's I'm just amazed it's taken us this long to have someone of your heritage as our chair. But, it's a key moment. Well, look, thank you. I think they're quite interesting reflections on the Commonwealth Games. It has also sort of set us in the context of other things that are going on at the moment. And one or two of the questions that I've had have been around the dreaded 1-2-3 plus waste contracts. What are you hearing out there? What's the sort of vibe from residents and reflections on that? Because, of course, like anything, we've done that right in the middle of the Commonwealth Games. The service started on the 1st of August. We're now a week or so in. What's your feedback?
I think we have to pay credit to the officers that have worked tirelessly to get this across the line. It's, you know, yes, we've decided to change the way we handle our waste, but actually it's been done for good reason. But it has required a huge amount of work. I always take my dad as a good barometer as a resident of the area, and I saw him the other day and he said, I quite like this new system, you know. He said, I realise I'm putting less waste in my grey bin, and the food caddy is very helpful because I'm filling that up and it's coming regularly and they're picking it up in an electric van.
And I'm
having to do more recycling. And I just think, well, tick all round, because actually that's exactly what we set out to do. And change is uncomfortable, and people, I think, will find that. And of course, some of the deliveries have been slightly delayed, but this is a huge transformation of service.
I think it's our single biggest contract, like £40 million contract. It's massive.
And it's also what everyone expects of the district council. You know, number one priority of our residents is bins.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yes, it's been a hard journey, but I think, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we'll start to see some of the benefits of that.
Aminy, how are you? What's your feedback on things like the multiple, you know, recycle the blue top bin as opposed to red boxes and bags?
Yeah, I can give you a glimpse into my community, if you like, about things like that. So in the Gurdwara, for example, we've done that for, you know, we've always collected food waste, but never really had anywhere for it to go.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective, you know, it's great. And from, like, you know, from feedback from residents that, you know, we are having some teething problems, but, you know, all credit to officers because they are, you know, responding to those, you know, that, and, you know, even if they can't have the solution overnight, they're still responding and, you know, things are getting done and there are some teething problems. But look, you know, waste is a massive, massive thing.
Yeah.
You know, it could be the only single thing that we do as a council, you know, because it's so big.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are receiving it quite well, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're ironing out the teething problems. And then it's like with anything new, you know, it's fear of the unknown, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when people start to kind of manage and it becomes part of life, it will all be good.
And I think we're hands up. We acknowledge that not all the collections of the new bins arrived on time, but we're getting there. I have to say, I really do thank residents for their understanding. There's been a lot of, you know, supportive comments, appreciating that and just helping us to resolve it. But also, to be fair, there are councillors going out delivering food caddies. Mm. We've got apprentices out with the rangers in their little vans delivering bins as well, just to get us up to speed. And I think now, broadly, we're up to speed on the deliveries, and there'll be a few more to clear over the next few days. But then the next thing is just catching up on mixed. The big thing for me is going to be seeing what the impact on the stats for recycling look like. How's this going to work? You know, are we improving our recycling as a community? Because that's the impact on the community. And then, of course, next year, we've got the materials recycling facility coming on stream at Sherborne Project with 8 other councils, where the robots will actually pick the rubbish through the recycling instead of it being hand sorted, which has got to be a good thing. And by the way, I don't know if you realize this, but that's the reason why you can't put shredded paper in the blue bin, because robots cannot pick up shredded paper.
Liam obviously knew that. I didn't.
Did you know that? Did you guys know that? Well,
no, I didn't. Liam's nodding his head like I knew.
I've heard you tell me before.
Yeah, I probably have.
You're a subject matter expert now.
I am. This is a great worry. Who'd have ever thought that I would get to being on recycling shredded paper?
I think that's really, you know, it's good. And I just going back to residents, I think, you know, we do have a responsibility to work with those residents who can't have big recycling bins outside of their, you know, outside their homes. And I think that there is still some work to do around that. But we understand that. And I think we know we need to do that and address it.
Yeah. And a positive reinforcement as to, you know, what the benefits are in doing this. I mean, the food collections, being Goodwara, that is all going to go back into good things. I mean, that is going to go into this dreaded machine called an anaerobic digester. Isn't it weird? I've even learned about that. And that makes things like fertilizer, it will, in fact, reduce, you know, our landfill problems that we have with composting food, etc., and the rotting food in them.
It also makes people think twice about how much food they're wasting.
Yeah, it does make you aware, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you actually physically, like when you just shove it in the bin, it's like, you know.
Eat your vegetables, Andrew. Yeah.
Take the simple thing. It's very it's horrible sorting cans from paper, right? We've lived through that. Cardboard in one, cans in the other. Thursday mornings are like the worst day in our house because we just sort of flip a coin. Who's going to do that dreaded task?
Yeah.
And the reward is we can just stick that all in one big top bin. Great. But now we need to, you know, we need to waste less food, and we need to be more careful with our grey bins.
I think so. I think it's positive. I'm looking forward to seeing how the final steps work out. But you know, the next 12 months is going to be really interesting to see the way that new scheme beds in. Now, we've also, as if we've been doing nothing else, but we've been, Liam, your team in particular, have been working hard on a couple of big funding bids. One is the dreaded Levelling Up Fund bid, which has been supported by Matt West and our MP. Hooray. But that's quite an innovative scheme and process. And do you want to talk a little bit about that? And I'll chime in as well.
Yeah, yep. Sure. I think, like with a lot of these funding applications, they're relatively last minute and they require quite a lot of quick turnaround. So I think our officers did a great job at pulling together, you know, the options of schemes we had available. And I think this comes as a part of a wider thing. You know, our high streets are changing, and that's obvious to most people that use particularly Leamington. The way the shape of the town is changing, and we just need to be honest about that and realistic, and make sure that our policy coming forward is you know, recognises that. The way people want to move is changing, and the need to improve things like bus links and transport links are, and evidenced by the Commonwealth Games, really high footfall
public transport
through public transport.
Record levels, I think.
Coming into the train station.
Yeah.
So really that there's funding bit there around the south of the town, around Old Town, improving the bus interchange, potentially relocating that. So you're moving some of that bus traffic away from the parade and taking it closer to the train station. A really great opportunity potentially to do something across our railway arches, our disused railway arch, to create a link between Bath Street and the train station. And that bid also forms part of that kind of wider work, really, which it starts really with the heart of where we're sat today in One Mill Street, which is the real regeneration of Old Town and the south, anywhere south of the river, really, which is we know is a really popular area for a lot of people in the creative industries. We see this place is a hub of that, and we, you know, really hope that that will spread across the south of the town. It will come across into places like Spencer Yard, where you've worked very hard on putting forward proposals to. For the redevelopment of the church at South Town. And the whole Spencer Yard development, along with this piece of work the officers have done around the Levelling Up Fund for Bath Street and the access to the train station, and potentially even further south across to Althorpe Street and
well,
your famous Wobbly Triangle.
The Wobbly Triangle. This is, by the way, the triangle running up the railway line, if you see it from above, you know, the railway line, canal and Clement Street. And a key part of that is a project you're also working on with the team, which is the Stoneleigh Arms. I love, as an Aussie, if you don't mind me saying, the idea of reopening a pub. I mean, what more could you do? The Stoneleigh Arms has been derelict for some years now. We actually own it. We've got some future high street funding now allocated there. And we've got some architects working on it, haven't you?
Yeah, so again, that could create a good gateway through the back to Court Street. There's a real fantastic opportunity to again, open up the routes through. There's some amazing businesses already across there, particularly under the other railway arches. Some really innovative new businesses coming into town. So it's finding really good spaces for them to work in. I was speaking today with a guy who works at Warwick University, all around basically activating the entrepreneurial spirit in the
town.
People who want to start businesses but maybe need the connections. One Mill Street is a fantastic place. You could sit upstairs and you've got an architect over the left, you've got a graphic designer on the right. It's creating spaces for those people to flourish, which this could become a huge part of that. And then also the future High Street Fund spreads further up into the town to the Town Hall, which we're now starting to work through some further designs around how to reimagine that space. I think we put Motion House in there fair few years back now.
That's working well, isn't it?
Working brilliantly. You know, yeah. A really good, innovative business. It's really supportive of particularly younger people who want to get into dance and into circus acts and to street dance and all the fun that entails. They've taken a space that actually really was relatively redundant. Might have been used for a council meeting every so often, but actually it pretty much sat dormant. We've brought creativity into that space. If we could spread that across the rest of the town hall, maybe perhaps even to our chamber in the future, there's certainly, that feels to me like a much better use of an iconic building in the heart of the town, which then also brings, you know, the extra benefits of more footfall and helps.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, the thought, I mean, we meet in the evenings. We're a working council. Logically, we do that so that people from work that can have full-time jobs can, in fact, be councillors or full-time lives, parents, etc. And we do that in the evening. And I think licensing meets in the afternoon, 4:30 or so. I mean, one of the ideas we're canvassing is to actually have our meetings at Shire Hall in Warwick, because the county council use their chambers during the day but not at night, and that might enable us to get more community benefit, if you like, out of the town hall in its refurb. What do you think of that?
Yeah, Amy? I think that's really important. And just going back to what Liam said about getting more footfall in that end of town, and, you know, and I think the creativity in the arts, I just think that, you know, we don't do enough. I mean, as a council, I know we do more than probably comparable to other councils.
Yeah.
But if we can offer those sorts of spaces, and, you know, it's a great building, and for people to be working out of that building and you know, and saying they are, I think it's also, you know, it's great for them too. So, yeah, I mean, we, like you said, we only use it for in the evenings. It could do with a little bit of a facelift as well.
We need some TLC and refurb and
lots
to bring it back to its best. And that takes money, but it also gives us a chance to refocus its work. I mean, I'm incredibly excited about tomorrow. I'm going to open Art in the Park, and I'll be on my best behaviour. I've been drilled to be on my best behaviour, but it just is such a brilliant expression of what I believe is one of our main competitive advantages here.
Yep.
I mean, we've had, rolling on from the Commonwealth Games, we've had, you know, we had the eSports going in now, and Sumi were involved in that, I think, in the assembly rooms, and
it was
yesterday. Mm. And it just strikes me that this is an interesting direction of travel and a very exciting one. But then beyond that, we've also been building, as rolling on from the Commonwealth Games, this Culture Fest, haven't we? Do you want to talk a bit about that? And because your team's really come up with some amazing
I think you hit the nail on the head there. That's sort of our USP, is that the fact we still have this such strong focus on arts and culture in Leamington. And actually, we don't let just the private sector lead that.
No,
some of our neighbouring districts will, for example, Stratford don't have an arts team within the council offices at all. Yes, they have a huge private sector drive, but we are pushing it from a district council level. So the work around Culture Fest, which I think is a brilliantly executed programming, which actually let everybody do the work and say, bring together all of the things you're doing across the next month or so around the Commonwealth Games, and we'll essentially publicise it and programme it for you, and actually bring it together in a cohesive way that says all these people, private and public, are doing all these different things around culture and arts, and we're going to stick it in one place and really push and advertise it. I think credit to Jonathan Branson, David Gilding and the team for the way they've brought that together, but also just credit to the way that you've maintained the focus that arts stays within this district council as a priority, and we don't let that become something we just rely on private sectors to drive, because actually you can already tell that we're doing a lot more than other districts, and that's only because we have that as a focus in the core part of our strategy. And when things like the Commonwealth Games come along, it just explodes.
It does. Yeah.
It's far more inclusive to kind of have it, you know, if you hand it all over to the private sector, you know, it'll only be probably the big bods that will get, you know, that. And I just think that the way we had those short films running throughout the Commonwealth Games on the big screens, and how diverse they were about, you know, the things that were included in them, I just think it's amazing that, you know, we are still doing that, because if we compare ourselves to other councils, they're doing.
I think it's something we can be proud of. It's really, you know, and the feedback I'm hearing, it's what our residents want. They want to live in a place that is doing that sort of thing, and that they're really, they support it. They come out,
and
they
participate
part of it.
You know,
it's a lot of community building piece.
Yeah, it's a living, breathing thing. I think, you know, we've protected things, spaces like the Spa Centre, which still deliver lots of programming that isn't a commercial of commercial benefits to the council. And programs that actually allow young people to get into the arts, which is which is great. And I think this is now the time to springboard that, level it up, and go right. Let's roll culture out to some of the more to the other towns in the district. It can be quite Leamington centric. All of our arts venues are in Leamington, and there is no reason why that's the case. But also, linking it more closely with events is key. You can, you know, the events play a huge part in the cultural sort of value of the town. And actually, events are not just footfall drivers. They're not just commercial things that we do in our public spaces, because some of them, you know, purely serve to enhance the cultural impact and the sense of cultural identity in the town. And actually, doing more diverse events, you know, we have quite narrow sort of field of events that we should be doing more with other communities in Leamington, in our public spaces, and in Warwick, and in Whitnash, and in Kenilworth.
But it can bring sport in too. I mean, one of the thoughts around the Pump Room Gardens was we should have some sort of festival that brings all the sports clubs together, because then residents can get an understanding about what's on offer, and they can be demonstrating their sports and their skills and what how they particularly, you know, we've got a lot of sports clubs as well. So the thing is, we are blessed to have some destination parks in Leamington that are particularly outstanding. But I'm also keen, I mean, we've talked about this, Liam, about how you take that resource and now start to engage Barford, dare I say, Bishop's Tatchbrook, Whitnash, Warwick, Kenilworth. You know, how do we get the activities out there? There are some out there, but that's a real opportunity, isn't it?
And potentially supporting local town and parish councils with the infrastructure, the expertise to run events. Actually, you've seen a lot of good things popping up in Bishop's Tatchbrook, for example, where they have the party in the the meadow.
Tatchfest.
Those type of things where, you know, the community value there more than we appreciate. Yep. And they really bring everyone back together in one place, and it's a good opportunity for us to sweat that and really kind of promote all of those events across the wider district. And that's part of the work that the team now needs to do. Use the springboard the Commonwealth Games has given us to now look at how we push our event strategy out so it has an economic benefit, cultural benefit, and a footfall benefit in all those towns.
I think it's really good that, you know, there's a big focus around the youth as well, I think, because sometimes that, you know, we can concentrate on what's going to make money, like if we just gave it all to the private sector, whereas if we're looking at it from a council perspective, we want to be inclusive. And, you know, even the Commonwealth Games, I think, you know, the focus around youth was amazing.
It's true.
Yeah
Basing the future with that. But the events program helps us do so much more about dealing with all the sorts of difficult issues in the community as well: isolation, loneliness, homelessness, people getting somehow lost from their connections with the community. And so the benefits aren't always as obvious as you might first think they are, in my view. The other thing is we've got giving an opportunity for artistic expression. I mean, I'm interested in our public open spaces in that way. And we've had a bit of a chat about this. I was very impressed. I went to Madeira, as it happened a while back, and they've got some amazing public sculpture in their parks that you sit and contemplate. I mean, it's not it makes the space, it gives it identity and place, if that makes sense. And in a time when we're building so many houses and, you know, expanding, which we have to do to meet need, whichever way you want to argue the numbers, there must be opportunities for us to make them distinct places as opposed to just anywhere places, if that makes sense. And I'm not talking about sort of posh art necessarily. I'm opportunities for our local artists to use these places.
Yeah, that's just it, isn't it? It's local and, you know,
express
we have
our
to...
community.
Yeah, and make the people part of it, because, you know, it's almost like you want to feel like you're at home, and if you know that local people are involved in doing these things, it's, you know, it's just, it sits better. And
it,
you know, if we really want to feel like, you know, this is home, then if local people are like a local artist or creator, you know, from the creative industries, the localism is really key. I think,
and I think that's where we look at places like particularly all the new builds out beyond Warwick Gates and out towards Bishop's Tatchbrook. Actually, that's those sort of spaces that can become a bit of a concrete jungle if you're not careful.
Yeah.
You know, have open space that can be used for events in the future. Yeah. And we don't necessarily always build new build developments with big green spaces. We build parks, or we build, you know, lakes, or we build country parks, but actually creating spaces where you can have larger, you know, bring the community together in one place is important. And maybe things like public art programmes would also help kind of draw the focus into where that should be done.
We talk a lot about neighbourhoods and place and those buzzwords, but actually, you know, what is a neighbourhood really? You know, it is a community where people feel at home.
Yeah. I mean, Martin Fields, for example, that play equipment, people are coming from miles around. Now, I personally think we need to step up and improve some of the other play equipment that's now looking a bit tired in other parts. And obviously, we'll be working on that in our new budget coming forward. Because I do think it just helps cement community, and particularly with young family and stuff. It's just a sort of lifeline very often, if I remember rightly, from when I had young children.
And I think the outdoors is far more like, you know, it's, people want to be more outside these days than they ever did, I think.
And we've got
it's so hot.
Today.
But also we're connecting up some of these spaces for cycling, picnics, adventures. And I keep joking with the chief executive because in Australia, councils provide free barbecues. You know,
properly. I thought you were going to say free bar then.
No mini bad luck. We can't do that with public money. But I just think it's that way people can come together as families. They prepare a meal, they clean it up and they move on. And people, you might think that they get trashed, but actually it's quite the opposite. And it avoids the problem of we've got right now with this tinder dry weather and disposable barbecues creating fire risk. I don't know. Maybe am I mad? Am I not at all cultural bias here?
I think it's a really good call. And I think the more we invest in those public spaces, the better protected they become. You know, it's easy to get vandalism in a park that no one cares about because no one cares about it. So by its very nature, it's easy for it to be targeted. Whereas some of those really great new installations you've got up on Europa Way, you can see that they're being well looked after. They're integrated into the community. People care about them. People, you know, and again, in Chase Meadow, the most amount of correspondence I get is around protecting things like parks. And the minute they see graffiti, the residents are all over it because they care about it.
Yeah.
And creating more spaces we care about. Newbold Common is a good area that potentially that, you know, the work we're doing there with the cycle routes and actually just generally creating more things to do. Barbecues, I think, are great.
Yeah.
Not setting fire to our open spaces.
I think that getting buy-in from people, you know, it creates a sense of ownership, doesn't it? Yeah. They think, you know, if it's theirs, then they'll look after it.
So the last area, this is the challenging area really for us at this time of year, is we start to think about our budgets and what we want to do next year. Now, I'm not sort of pinning any of us down here, but we've got a pretty difficult situation, high inflation, high energy costs, which, yes, are impacting the council because we're a big energy consumer, heating our buildings, etc. But we also have to face inflation and how that's going to impact on salaries, you know, for our team. I mean, we've got, you know, and they've got a pretty big salary bill, and we do want to look after our officers and attract the best officers, so we're not at all. I don't think anyone's in a place where we want to underplay that one. But equally, we've got residents who are facing some really tough times, making, we believe, and I think rightly, some tough calls on heating this winter and with an uncertain future beyond that. Mm. Now, I know as a district, we are being very progressive in advancing projects to create work and to make sure wherever possible we're engaging local contractors and putting money back into our community. But what's your thoughts going into this budget? Is this one, do you think, where we need to just hunker down and sort of let the tide go over us? Or do we stand up like we did in COVID? I mean, what's your sense on this? I'm going to go to you, Minnie. I mean, you're the leader of the Labour group as well, so here we are.
I mean, I think it's, look, we've got a cost of living crisis. It's going to get worse. People are going to be struggling. You know, they're going to have to make difficult choices. And I think, first and foremost, that's where our thoughts should be. Mm-hmm. Because even at, you know, we talk about our offices and, you know, people who are working in, you know, our colleagues in the council, everyone is under the same, you know, no one's going to escape the cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
But we must really look after our most vulnerable residents.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we don't take that into account, you know, people choosing between heat or rent, you know, what would you choose? Or feeding your children or going cold or, you know, there's huge issues out there. And I think, you know, we need to make sure that we think about those, you know, those issues. And they're real, you know.
And you've worked really hard with Richard, you know, our finance portfolio holder, Richard Hales, who was on last time, around this hardship fund. And I know we went well and beyond as far as getting those additional grants out to residents, the most needy residents, which I hope is going to make at least positive approach. And it's not a huge amount of money, but it is a start.
I mean, of course, we'd like to do more, you know. But I think it's really important that, like we did with the hardship fund and when we looked at the budget last year, it's really important that we put our residents at the heart of everything and really recognise and think about the kind of choices that people have to make because it's really difficult and it's only going to get worse, and winter's going to be, you know, sorry to be glum about it, but it's going to be a dark time.
Yeah. I take your point there. We've, Liam, we did another bid as well over the summer, didn't we, to the UK Shared Prosperity Fund, for which we've got 3.5 million or something. But it's going to target our lower super output areas, those areas where there is the greatest deprivation in Warwick District. What's your thinking more broadly around our investments and how we can try and direct some of this money?
I think the other thing I'd add on top of the points you mentioned is we also declared a climate emergency. So we're also battling with trying to ensure policies coming forward that, you know, making those changes costs money. So we have that to battle with on top of that. So I think the best thing we can do is focus on things in our sphere of influence, you know, things like council tax, but also some of the investments we make and how targeted they are. And really, to Minnie's point, target some of the more sort of short-term interventions that we can make, like the hardship fund, should be targeted to those that most need it. And then things like the shared prosperity fund should target those super low output areas so that we are really doing everything we can and spending valuable officer time on projects that actually will make a return, not financially, but in terms of the benefit to the residents. And then outside of that, I think we shouldn't lose the pace, the momentum around things like the local housing company. I know you talked a lot about that in the last podcast. Those things that make absolute sense, they tick the climate box, they tick the financial returns.
And they tick the social housing.
So they're key, also targeting those that need it most. And they're doing it in a way that means that in the long run, we're also helping the climate. So those feel to me like very, very clear routes that we should be taking in the short term.
So last night, Liam, was it last night? I think it was, or Wednesday night, sorry. We took through Cabinet, as you know, Minnie, a paper on a hydrogen hub. And a DPD. These are on net zero carbon housing development. Two very major steps. One, the climate zero carbon planning policy document would mean that our residents in those houses, 40% are affordable, would have lower heating bills. So thinking to the future, it doesn't resolve this winter, but it would help in the future. But the other one that really interests me, and I just want to talk a little bit about, as much as in principle, it's to get your thinking, is around the hydrogen hub. Now, this is where we're exploring the prospect of having a hub that actually produces green hydrogen made from renewable energy that the plan is that we would use then for our waste vehicles, you know, the RCVs that go around collecting our rubbish, to put in there to reduce our carbon emissions, but also to reduce the fuel costs of running these vehicles. So there's a business case as well as is that smart? Is that the direction of travel, do you think?
I think so. I think we have to recognise that some of that will be ultimately out of our sphere of influence in the sense that it will need private investment.
Sure.
But things won't change unless things like this come forward and we put some ambition forward and show that actually. I know we've had a lot since that paper was put, I know there's been a lot of interest in that. And that, I think, is such a good dip test of actually, the thinking is right. We need to do it in a way that, you know, again, we've got officers that have a lot to achieve in, you know, with very difficult resourcing. So as long as we're doing those sort of projects, not to the detriment of some of the absolute must-dos, bins, green spaces, all of those pieces, then I think, why not? We should be showing the way, that we're willing to show the way and lead the way forward.
A couple more areas just to test with you before we wrap up. One is some thinking we're putting in now, because there's been a long-standing, parked because of COVID situation about where we house the council headquarters. You know, what do we do with Riverside House and where do we go from here? And we're going to be seeing some reports from officers coming forward that I'm keen that we get on with now, that we don't wait for the next council to deal with. I want to understand how we can deliver the maximum public benefit from these public assets. So, you know, addressing things, as we've said before, it needs to have 40% affordable housing, no question. We need to protect the trees. We need the highest net zero building standards possible. Are we up for this? I mean, we're in a different place, council office-wise, than we were.
Yeah, well, I think if we're looking at, you know, things that have worked well since COVID, working at home is definitely, you know, it's something that's that's worked well. I also think historically where we are still in Riverside House is like one hub where everyone had to kind of make their way to. I think going forward, you know, people need to access council services. We should be offering outreach.
Indeed.
You know, and actually going into the hearts of communities rather than expecting people to come to us.
Yeah.
Because that's how we can really add value to communities.
And,
you know, people working at home and giving people that choice, I think, is key.
It's got to be positive, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want to attract the best, best people.
Absolutely.
To the team.
Because I think, you know, gone are the days where you say you want people in even three times a week for 3 days. You know, people say, okay, well, I'll go somewhere where I can, you know, the work-life balance thing is just, you know, it's life balance. You know, it's kind
it
of,
is.
You know, it's not it just is. All about work. It's fitting, you know, it's fitting in everything. And actually, I just think that was one of the positives that's come out of COVID, and we shouldn't change things
and
that
it
work.
It costs a lot of money to run Riverside House.
I totally agree. I think we need to get out of Riverside House as soon as it's practical. You know, it's a cost burden to the taxpayer. It doesn't bring any benefit to our offices. I don't believe it's bringing them together any more than going to another location, a satellite office or another location that's more public facing, enables residents to be able to walk in and get in touch with the person they need to talk to, but not in this very old fashioned, archaic way.
So the test really is not just about delivering financial benefits. It's about delivering a wider suite of public benefit, whether it's affordable housing, addressing net zero
social
building,
social housing.
But there's a whole range of affordable. There's, you know, we do need shared ownership as well, and we do need affordable rent. But I take your point. We also really need good quality net zero carbon council houses of all types. And we need them in Leamington as we do across all our communities, not just in any one area. But we've got, in this budget period coming up, actually quite a bit interesting sort of set of questions to answer. In my view, some of it is around attending, as you were saying earlier, Minnie, about immediate needs for our residents this winter. Those tough, tough choices. Mm. What can we do to intervene to help? But beyond that, as you were saying, Liam, is we also need to address the structure, if you like, of how we bring money in to run our community service programs and run the council and take on some of those challenging, you know, place that I would come back to the hydrogen hub, but that's an example of something really quite innovative that could generate income for us as well as achieve climate change goals. So it's going to be an interesting few months till February. Okay, good stuff. Well, look, thank you very much, Councillor Minnie Mangat and Councillor Liam Bartlett, for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a real pleasure for you bravely joining The Local Point. I would just thank all our residents for their various encouragements that we continue this process. And please do share your views and thoughts for the next edition. Thank you for your time with The Local Point. It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.